government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and Ira. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go into our third segment. And Biden's one of my favorites. Okay, we're back with Senator Ron Johnson. And Senator, I know that you've been doing this for years, looking at the Bidens, the Biden, the Hunter Biden, Jimmy Biden. It's just amazing to me. What, you know, your speech from the floor back in, I think it was 2022, was extraordinary. What can you tell us? Is this going to go anywhere at the end of the day? Because I, you know, when we all saw the laptop from hell back in October of 2020, I was influential in trying to get the some press in the meet in the UK interested in the story, because I knew it wasn't going to go anyplace here in the United States. It was going to be a lockdown. And my lights went on when I saw the 51 signatures on the letter. You know, the Brennans, the Clappers, the Morrells, the boys were back in town, and they were going to shut this down. I didn't know at the time that, you know, Anthony Blinken and Morrell had a communication of it, but I'm smart enough and old enough to know that, you know, somebody said, let's cut a deal because we want to get Biden in there. And I thought it was interesting how they used that letter during the debate as the excuse when the laptop came up. But now that we've gotten into the money, it seems extraordinary to me that Uncle Jimmy, Uncle Frank's not so much in the picture, but Uncle Jimmy and Hunter were, you know, carousing across the globe, cutting deals and getting money. I think that's what's interesting is that we had Hunter Biden serving on these corporate boards, but at the same time, he was really representing some of the governments to do deals, but he never registered as a foreign agent.
Well,
what's really going on here?
Well, first of all, has it been obvious for many, many years that James Biden, Hunter Biden, are corrupt individuals? I mean, I think Politico wrote a piece. They titled it "Biden Inc." I think this might have been back in, I can't remember the exact year.
Yeah,
but the New York Times was reporting on this until. You know, they're reporting on the Ukrainian connection there until Joe Biden became the Democrat presidential candidate. And then they had to rally around it. So to me, it's been so obvious. I think what troubles me more than even the Biden crime family and their corruption, by the way, I never took any joy in investigating somebody as troubled as Hunter Biden, but I have to admit, the way he's been handling this recently, how brazen he's been, and his lack of remorse. Now I'm pretty glad I did it. But anyway, what's more troubling than just the corruption of the Biden family is the corruption that's been revealed in our federal law enforcement, our federal intelligence agencies, then of course the complicity and corruption in the media that's covered it all up. But that's what allowed this. Again, I'll go back, I said this in an earlier segment, if we had an unbiased and honest media that held both sides accountable, you wouldn't have the corruption in our federal health or law enforcement or intelligence agencies, And the Bidens wouldn't have risen to the prominence that they've risen to. We wouldn't have a president that is so highly corrupted. So again, it's so crucial that we have a honest and unbiased free press, and we don't have that in this country, which is a real danger.
It is a real danger. I remember I covered Senator Biden. I was a political director at CNN back in the 80s, and we covered Senator Biden running for presidency then. He never got any traction in Iowa. He never gotten any traction in New Hampshire. But, you know, he dropped out of the race because he plagiarized. Then he got arrogant. He got nasty, even with some of his voters, saying he had a higher IQ than anybody else. But I never thought of him as sort of the front guy, the number one guy. He was always the behind guy. He was never as popular as Ted Kennedy or Chris Dodd up on Capitol Hill. Yes, he was head of banking, judiciary, and foreign affairs, but he had sort of a nasty streak to him. But my lights went on about 2000, I think it was 2016 or 17, when he as the vice president of the United States, gave a blessing. He gave Jill and he gave a blessing to Hunter Biden. His brother's widow having an affair when Hunter was still married to his first wife. And I thought at that time, in most households, if that would happen, somebody would go through the front door, somebody would go through a picture window. It just, you know, because that's unseemly. But it seems to me that there's no self-reflection with the Biden family, none whatsoever. Whether it's the diary for Ashley, and what she allegedly says that she took showers with her father that were inappropriate at the time. We've got Hunter, and it is really, as Miranda Devine has described it, it is a laptop from hell. We have hookers that he has flown in across state lines. We have people that obviously were in meetings in Washington, D.C., we have a PR firm in Washington, D.C., I think the name of it is Blue Star, something like that, who had to sign and register as a foreign agent who was working with Hunter Biden. There was somebody else that had to register as a foreign agent recently, too, who was involved with this mess. And it almost looks like there are too many people in Washington, D.C. that knew exactly what Hunter Biden was doing, what Jimmy Biden was doing, and it's almost too big to fail, and they have to keep this cover up because there are too many meetings that were happening about foreign governments, not just these foreign entities, but foreign governments. When the Chinese wanted to do a deal, whether it's with Kazakhstan or Romania or Ukraine.
Yeah, I think
that has to do with the one brick road foreign policy of Xi. So what is it about Washington? Have we gotten to the point where everybody's so corrupt in terms of the Democratic side in State Department, in Justice, in the FBI? Because there's no way that people didn't know that this was going on. It's just too obvious to me.
You have to believe that the powers that be viewed Joe Biden as a pretty useful tool, and they've been using him to implement, their open borders, their wars. Again, I can't explain it all. I've just got a lot more questions than I have answers. But what I've experienced myself, for example, during our investigation in 2020, we were accused by our ranking members of soliciting, disseminating Russian disinformation. It's a complete falsehood. The only Russian disinformation in our investigatory record was entered by our ranking member, my ranking member, Gary Peters. But you had this entire corruption of the FBI that, first of all, we were investigating the whole Crossfire Hurricane investigation. They knew that this was a dirty, political dirty trick of Hillary Clinton. And yet they grabbed a hold of it and ran with it for a couple of years. The press had to know. The FBI knew that the Steele's dossier was total crap, that it was based on a subsource that was being investigated by the FBI as being a Russian spy. They knew all these things, and yet they continued this for years. They're still continuing with it. So again, I've just been part of, or been the target of the same level of corruption, the same types of dirty tricks, the same types of smears. And all I can tell you is it works wonderfully. I mean, they are very effective at destroying people and marginalizing people, of making people seem like a bunch of nutcases as they continue with their agenda pretty much unabated with impunity. That's my perspective. That's what I'm seeing. And so as a result, I mean, I just don't trust anything the federal government tells me at this point in time. I just don't. I mean, I think there are good people there, and that's maybe too blank a statement, but on the important things, the things that are really impacting people's lives, I just don't trust them.
Do you think that Congressman Jordan and Comer are going to get Joe Biden up on Capitol Hill to testify?
No.
You think it's just going to blow everybody off?
I think that Chairman Jordan and Comer have really done a good job. You know, Senator Grassley and I pretty well laid out the foundation. Mm-hmm. You know, we showed all the money coming into the accounts. And now, you know, Jordan and Comer have just done a good job of filling in all the puzzle pieces. Again, it's just galling to me when I hear people in the media, but there's no evidence. I mean, there is a mountain of evidence. And again, the media knew Biden was corrupt before he ever ran for president. They knew it. They just refused to report on it. Most of them refused to investigate it. So again, these things are so obvious, just like so much of the abuses during COVID were so obvious. But again, when you got the media on your side, pushing your narrative, you can be very effective.
Well, you can't lie about the financial records, and having the impeachment, getting the impeachment inquiry in motion enabled Chairman Comer and Chairman Jordan to then go out and to subpoena, you know, the banks in Cyprus or wherever these banks were, and to get more additional information. And that's what's alarming to me is that the evidence is so clear. It's voluminous, you know, and it's tough to even if you're even interested in it the way that, you know, John Solomon or myself or Todd or some other journalist are. It is overwhelming because it's just so much. But once you realize that there's so much information, you can't ignore it. There's only one conclusion you can come to, is that this is one hell of a, you know, corrupt family, and they just were selling the Biden brand all over the place. But again, because we are experienced in Washington, they didn't do it alone. There were too many people that were involved with this, you know. And I think it's going to blow back on Anthony Blinken at some point, and Ron Klain, some of these other people, because they didn't do this alone. There's no way.
Yeah, you know what kind of frustrates me is, you know, we got the inflows. I just haven't had access to the outflows. And my guess is the Bidens were very good at covering their tracks. I think some of the more interesting pieces of information that came out in that indictment. I mean, the fact over, was it a 4-year period or 2-year period? Hunter Biden spent $4 million. $1.6 million he spent in cash. I mean, try spending $1.6 million in cash. I mean, is that how he got 10% for the big guy? You know, over $600,000 on sex trafficked women, and 800,000 sex trafficked women and other.
But that's just because of his addiction, Senator. You know, happens in every family. That was the attitude that Joe Biden had. No. You don't. I don't know too many people in their families where the son, who's the addict, sleeps with the daughter-in-law. Okay, who's another addict? All right, I just find that incredible. And then there's this overlooking the fact that he was involved with trafficking.
And can you imagine if his name was Hunter Trump?
Oh my gosh.
I think that says, just reverse the tables on these types of stories, and you know, put all these misdeeds, you know, lay that in front of a Republican, and that's going to be covered ad nauseum in the media, as opposed to if it's a Democrat, it's going to be completely covered up, not only in the media, but in federal law enforcement and in our courts.
You know, there's a piece of this pie that I think is kind of interesting and sticks out to me. Why hasn't somebody subpoenaed Louis Freeh, the former head of the FBI? Because in the Hunter Biden laptop, he reaches out to Hunter as Joe Biden's leaving the vice presidency, and he's not yet out the door. And Louis Freeh emails and says to Hunter, you know, I tried to put $100,000 into the trust for your brother's kids, and there was a problem with it, and I'm straightening it out, something to that effect, and then says to him, let's get together so when your dad leaves office that, you know, we can do business together. But in fact, we now know that he was involved with, when Joe Biden was still vice president, he was involved representing somebody in Romania that was brought to the table, brought to his table by Hunter Biden. So why don't we have the former FBI director up there testifying and say, what did you know and what did you do about it?
I can't explain that. Again, I lost my chairmanship, my ability to subpoena in 2021. Again, I think Jordan and Comer have done a good job. They've got limited resources. Now, I try and point out, if we get the majority, I'll be chairman of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee Investigation. As ranking member, I've got 5 staff members. We've got millions of federal government employees. The premier oversight investigatory body of the Senate has 5 investigators, 5 staff members. So it just proves that Congress is not dedicated to oversight. They're not dedicated to investigation. They're dedicated to spending money that we don't have.
So enormously
frustrating to me.
Is that because of McConnell's leadership that you only have 5 investigators? Because I remember the days when Dingell was alive, and he used to call them the guerrilla team of his investigators on the House side. But I mean, can you get larger budgets for oversight?
When I was chairman of Homeland Security, I controlled that budget. I came in, the Permanent Subcommittee got $1 million. I just gave Rob Portman $1 million. When he became ranking member, even though he got the same budget as I had, because they increased it 15%, because they're going to do all this oversight to COVID, they've done 0 oversight on COVID, he cut my budget. And Rand Paul hasn't restored it. So I'm still not back up to the level that I allocated to Rob Portman when I was chairman of the full committee. So I think there's multiple people to blame here, but in general, I don't know what the House budgets are, but I think the House has always taken oversight investigations more seriously. How much do you think the J6 committee spent investigating January 6th? You know, we are going down that path. When I still had bulk of my investigators as chairman of the full committee, you know, we were the ones that were looking at the video before we kind of shut out of that, but we're the ones that my staff were the ones that saw that 300 people came in the West Terrace door was just open for them. But then our access got dramatically limited, and I got kind of cut out of the investigations. I'm hoping to become chairman of the committee of the permanent subcommittee again, but you know, I'll definitely need more resources. It'll be nice if we have some journalists beating the drums to get more funding. But I say that just the Senate in general is not particularly interested in doing oversight because they don't want people looking into how they misspend money.
Senator, I want to take a break right here. I want to come back because I want to talk to you about January 6th. That's important. It's an important conversation. Okay, we're back with Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, you brought up January 6th. Full disclosure, I started off in broadcasting at ABC News at the network level in Washington, D.C. a zillion years ago. And I was pretty stunned when I took a look at who was the staff director of January 6th. It was one of the 51 guys, Buckley was his name, who was one of the 51 guys who signed the letter saying that the Hunter laptop from hell actually was a Russian disinformation. It was the first time in history that any quote-unquote select committee, and it was any more a select committee than my coffee cup is, but because they didn't play by the rules, but they hired a former president of a network who is a documentary filmmaker, and a very good one, I should say. But then when I found out that when they scripted January 6th, they gave those scripts to the networks. And then they had the teleprompters at the foot of on the floor in that caucus room where they held the hearings, and that they had rehearsals. And ostensibly they gave the scripts, I guess, to the networks, and they did the rehearsals because they wanted to keep the time because they were asking the networks to give them prime time airing. But that has never happened ever. And I found it to be, you know, very few of us were talking about it. Some people in the print didn't know it at the time. I happen to know it, but you know, and I come from the as a television producer. I was horrified when I learned that, because it was such collusion. And I don't know how this can break anymore. I don't know how we can stop this snowball, but I'm alarmed that people on Capitol Hill were in the room. They saw the teleprompters on the floor. They had people working on the staff that were negotiating with the networks for prime time. And that's all well and good, because if the president of the United States, any president, wants 15 minutes at 9 o'clock to talk to the nation, there's always that liaison relationship with the networks. But in this case, it was a one-sided point of view docudrama that was played out on prime time in America. And when I watched it, every time it aired, I thought to myself, wow, how far has Capitol Hill dropped? And I think that's a stain. That's a stain on this country. It's a stain on Capitol Hill. It's a stain on Liz Cheney. It's a stain on the White House. Because if you're just looking at that, yeah, you would have gotten sucked into that point of view. But if you knew what was going on behind the scenes, it's horrifying.
Christine, it's a stain on journalism.
Yes, it is.
And if you had honest and unbiased, they wouldn't let them get away with that. I mean, I guess the media's covered the Jordan Comer hearings is effectively, right?
Oh, of course.
I've always said that the bias in the media is revealed far more in what they don't report than even in the highly biased news that they do report. So it's what they're not reporting on COVID. They're not reporting the lies. They're not reporting the corruption in the FBI and the intelligence community. They're just ignoring that. Instead, they highlight, again, any kind of corruption in Republican circles, they'll cover 24/7. It'd be, you know, behind the news anchor's head every day, you know, 300 days since the president hasn't, given us an answer on this. So I keep going back to the media as being so crucial. To a democratic republic, and we don't have one. And that is.
I agree.
You know, democracy dies in darkness, the Washington Post. Well, you're killing it, Washington Post. It's people like you, New York Times, the major networks that aren't honest, that aren't unbiased, that aren't holding both sides equally accountable. I want to be held accountable. I want both sides to be held equally accountable. But let me tell you, we haven't even begun to understand what happened on January 6th. You know, that was the moment I lost my chairmanship. So I couldn't investigate these things. I wrote a series of oversight letters. Basically, all of them have gone unanswered. I was writing letters to the committee itself. These are the questions you ought to ask. They weren't being asked. You know, what happened to security? Who's in charge? Right. That's Pelosi. That's McConnell. I think Zoe Lofgren and Roy Blunt. You know, we were briefed more prior to the Brett Kavanaugh hearings than we were prior to January 6th, even though we knew there were going to be thousands and thousands more protesters. Why weren't precautions being made? I'm the guy that entered into the record J. Michael Waller's testimony, eyewitness testimony, before he watched any news reports. That testimony stood the test of time, but after I entered it, Chairman Klobuchar came out to the media and said, well, here's Senator Johnson again, entering conspiracy theory into our record. So now we're starting to hear about all these undercover police officers dressed up as Trump supporters. Again, we haven't even begun to uncover the true story of what happened January 6th, the lack of security. I wish I would have been in charge to do a real investigation, because we have not had one yet.
And you know,
talk about subpoenas that haven't been issued. You know, where's Chairman Westrup of the subcommittee on the coronavirus pandemic? Why hasn't he subpoenaed Anthony Fauci's emails unredacted? Now, I've been making this case now for 3 years. We're down to the last 50 pages. HHS simply will not give us access to the last 50 pages unredacted Anthony Fauci's emails. That's where the incriminating information is. And we've got a Republican subcommittee. They won't even subpoena those records. And of course, the Senate, you know, Gary Peters, Richard Blumenthal, they're not going to subpoena those records. They haven't yet, even though I've been screaming about it now for 3 years.
That's why we need whistleblowers. We need people on the inside. We need people to keep on leaking to us. I mean, I know that, you know, a lot of times people don't want to come forward because, you know, even if they're whistleblowers. But if we get any that are serious, Senator Johnson, I promise you, I'll come to you first because they might need some protection. But let's talk on another topic. Let's talk about the broken budget process. Is there any way that we can solve this?
Yeah, unfortunately, the American public loves benefits from the federal government. And so you don't have a public outcry for fiscal responsibility. I think it starts there. But what has happened in Washington, D.C. is, as dysfunctional as it is, it's a very well-honed process to mortgage our children's future. And that well-honed process doesn't include passing a budget. It doesn't include bringing up in an orderly fashion individual appropriation bills. It's basically ignoring the entire process till the beginning of the fiscal year you're supposed to fund, go through a series of continuing resolutions that expire right before Thanksgiving or Christmas or a two-week recess, jamming members with a multi-thousand page bill that nobody has time to read.
I'm David Cross, and you may know me from my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management, a family-owned and operated investment advisory practice. I'm a certified portfolio manager, and my job is to help you make better decisions with your money. One of the things we try to avoid is investing in companies that push the woke agenda. If you're invested with one of the big firms out there, there's a pretty good chance that you're feeding the beast that hates your values. Our company is 100% conservative, and we'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
Jamming them now again with earmarks, the gateway drug to this massive deficit spending, passing it in a few hours, going home and forgetting about it. We just saw that happen twice over the last month. Two minibuses, you know, can't have an omnibus, so break it into two minibuses. Loaded up with the, you know, billions of dollars of earmarks. Get it passed because there's enough people in the Uniparty that love to brag about bringing home bacon to the constituents. You know, hundreds of millions of dollars to every constituency in your particular state or district. That's why we're $35 trillion in debt with no end in sight. It's a thoroughly corrupt process, but it's a very well-honed process for doing this.
What happens in the future now that Senator McConnell is going to step down? What's going on behind the scenes? How are you people reacting to that? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I come from the business world, okay? And so my background is with a functioning organization.
This must be driving you crazy. I forgot that you started businesses, but you're right. This must be, I know that one of my classmates from Georgetown, Francis Rooney, was up on Capitol Hill for two terms as a congressman from Naples. And he was going crazy because he came from the business world as well. And he said he's never seen such dysfunctional and people not having goals and goals not being met and nobody cares. So
because they've never been part of a functioning organization. They've come, you know, staff members of Congress. And so very few have come from the private sector. So they have no experience in, little knowledge of, and I say very little sympathy for the private sector. And again, they've never been even part of a functioning organization. That successful ones generally have a vision statement, a mission statement. They have principles that guide their actions. They establish goals. People in the organization understand their roles in achieving those goals, that mission. That's not Congress. That's not our Republican conference. So what I'm trying to do with the fact that Leader McConnell has announced that he's not going to run, given us time, I'm trying to drive our conference through a process where we figure out what do we stand for? What are we willing to fight for? What is our mission statement? What is our purpose? Right. And again, if I were to design the mission statement, it would be simply to effectively counter the ideology and policies of the radical left that are destroying this country. I mean, at this point in time, that's what I think Republicans' role needs to be. We need to stop this madness, this destruction. I started out the conference meeting, I called with the Republican conference, does anybody believe we've effectively countered all this destruction, the massive deficit spending, the open borders, the division within our country? We're not. But again, you get managed by your staff here. You get caught up in all these little tactics, you know, demanding amendments that aren't going to pass. And You know, it is madness. It's madness. But you have to understand, government is driven by the administration. And Congress has made itself, in many cases, just irrelevant by willingly turning over its constitutional authority, you know, its power of the purse, pretty much the executive office. You know, we should have, the House should have stood firm and just dug its heels in on these spending bills. First of all, they should have been passing them out of the House in early 2023 to fund 2024. And for DHS, say, we're just not going to fund sanctuary cities. We're not going to fund jurisdictions that won't turn over criminal illegal aliens to ICE so they can deport them. We're not going to fund that. We could use the power of the purse. We haven't done it effectively because we by and large don't have a publicity strategy or communication strategy that can effectively counter what the left has. They've got the media. Again, it's not easy. It's not like we can depend on the media to cover what we try and do fairly. We're always going to get blamed for shutdowns, even though the Democrats are the ones that like toying with them. So it's not a level playing field. It's not a fair fight. But we have to become far more effective, which means we need a mission statement. We need a strategy to overcome what the left is doing in this country.
Would you ever consider being the leader?
Well, I'm leading this process, but I have pointed out that inside the conference, my role over the last number of years has been to be that kid that points out the emperor has no clothes. And that kid's not real popular. So literally, I went through the fact that, listen, going from when I got into Congress, $14 trillion in debt to $35 trillion, that's not success. That's a failure. Right. The debacle over these border negotiations. I mean, give me a break. Nobody's looking for an immigration bill. That was a debacle because McConnell ignored the conference. All we were looking for was an enforcement mechanism. I mean, we passed tax reform. It expires in 8 years. Well, that didn't have to happen. That's a failure. Okay. And of course, our complete lack of analyzing what went wrong during COVID, our miserably failed response, the fact that we haven't done oversight on the spending, and the fact that we didn't hold the agency's feet to the fire to push treatment. That's something I haven't emphasized enough. Why is everything focused on vaccines as opposed to treating illnesses?
Right.
Okay. So again, there's so much that we do wrong. And one big difference between the private sector and government. In the private sector, we probably overemphasize fixing problems, oftentimes to ignoring celebrating what successes we have with just, you know, problems. How do we fix them? In government, in Congress, nobody even acknowledges the problem. They ignore them. So we compound problems and we just celebrate bills that have a pretty name that don't do what they do. I mean, it's madness. It's grotesquely frustrating.
Senator, there is one topic that I know that it hasn't really been brought up on Capitol Hill that I hope that you guys do address at some point. You know, there was a time when the Jane Fondas of the world demonstrated against female genital mutilation that happens in the Middle East and happens in Africa. And now, I throw this into medical trafficking as well, because there's a lot of lies about this transition, and we're mutilating children here in the United States. We're legalizing it, we're normalizing it. And in some of the research and reporting we've done, I have discovered that in fact, you know, there are FDA warnings that some puberty blockers can cause a loss of vision. It's not just infertility, a loss of vision and inflammation of the brain. And I think that because of the political climate, and quite frankly, the Biden administration and pushing the transgender down people's throats to the point where parents cannot any longer possibly protect their own children, which is predatory behavior. Thank you very much. That's what predators do. That's what sex offenders do. When they, if you're a Catholic priest, if you're a Boy Scout leader and you mark a kid and you're having sex with that kid, you're raping the kid, but it's always don't tell mommy and daddy. All right. That's the kind of culture that we're pushing here. I hope that you guys on Capitol Hill take on transgender from the pharmaceutical point of view, because what we're doing to our children here in the United States is absolutely horrific.
I remember Joe Biden just proclaimed Easter Sunday It's Transgender Visibility Day, which I think is a particular outrage. You know, I am so disappointed in the medical establishment that has condoned and allowed doctors and nurses to mutilate children. Mm-hmm. You can't get a tattoo if you're under 18 without parental. Sometimes you can't even do it even with parental consent. And yet we are mutilating children. I think the UK is just banned.
They shut it down. They shut it down.
No, these are incredibly dangerous drugs. There are so many drugs I think are incredibly dangerous. We're just not able to ask the question, because if we ask the question, we're tagged an anti-vaxxer or something. I mean, PPSIs or whatever the drugs for mental illness, that type of thing. Some of these things are incredibly dangerous.
That's right.
There's studies on this, and yet you just can't raise it because the media has, big pharma has captured the media as well. And I'm a free market guy, but I think we need to ban drug advertising on media because that has allowed them to capture the media. And I think that was a big problem in terms of our miserably failed response to COVID. So now
I agree with you on that. And I will tell you, because I was working at CNN at the time that they approved having the ads on television, and then they had to put the disclaimer. And I remember at some time in 2021, I was on the phone, I had the TV on a Sunday night, I had it on to 60 Minutes. So this is 2021. For the first time, I saw the HVP vaccine, which again, there's been a book written about it, again, that there've been people who have been injured with the vaccination, yet that was actually on one of the highest rated television shows, on the Sundays. And I thought to myself, this is getting to the point where there's no ethics. There's absolutely no ethics in terms of what they're accepting in terms of ads and putting them on. And I agree with you. I think that all of these ads should be taken off the networks. We were at one point the only country in the world that had it. Then New Zealand put some ads on, and I think that they've taken them off. But we still are the only one. I think that the ads should be taken off the internet as well, because what happened here from an evolution point of view, when they were put on television in the United States in the 1980s, the internet shows up, let's say 2000, 2001, and then all of a sudden that's looked at as a Wild West platform to put more ads. So you have ads for drugs on the internet as well. I don't think people quite understand. When we talk about censorship that happened in 2020 and since about COVID and everybody getting gaslit and everything on the internet, and we were too, I think people have to understand this was really a partnership. This was a partnership between pharma and big tech. Because pharma pays big tech, just like Zuckerberg testified before Congress when they asked him how do they make money, he said advertisement. Pharma puts ads on the internet. So if you take, I say this as a journalist who has worked in the business for decades. If you're going to take it off TV, but take it off the internet as well. I think they should be taken down because they're not telling. pardon me, they're not telling the truth about these drugs. Not telling the truth. You don't need disclaimers. People need to, it's laughable. People come to the United States, they see television and they see these drugs and they'll say, oh, take this, but check with your doctor because you might get a disease, you might get a stroke, or you might die. But we still put it on television.
No, that's why I clunked the Biden administration, federal health agencies, big pharma, media, and the big tech, social media companies. That was the COVID cartel. They are the people that destroyed, that sabotaged early treatment, causing probably hundreds of thousands of unneeded deaths here in America. They're the ones that pushed the vaccine. They continue to push the vaccine. They're the ones that will continue to cover up for the vaccine injury, so that people that have lost their lives and people that are permanently disabled can't get treatment now. That is the COVID cartel. And again, it operates because big pharma advertises on media and the big tech social media giants. So that's why, as a private sector guy, I don't like saying this, I would absolutely ban advertising on both media and on the internet. I mean, we have to do it so we get honest reporting on some of the harms these drugs are doing. Listen, there are all kinds of miracle drugs. I want drug companies to develop life-saving new therapies, okay? But I don't want them pushing new drugs that aren't even as good as the ones that are already generic, that they're not making money on. And we have already corrupted not only medical science, but medical journals, as well as media. There is complete corruption of our medical establishment. And people need to understand that.
My last question for you, Senator, and thank you for everything you've done. Would you want to shut down gain of function until they have regulations?
There is no reason for gain of function research. I mean, the benefit, there's just not benefit in relationship to the risk. And if you were going to do it, it would have to be so tightly controlled in like a single lab. And you certainly wouldn't, you know, subcontract it out to people like Peter Daszak, who then further subcontracts it out to the Chinese. You're not going to share that with a global adversary. I mean, it was madness. And of course, that's what they're all covering up. That's so obvious. As soon as the Fauci emails, even heavily redacted, came out, it was obvious that in addition to all the computational biology sites talking to the fear and cleavage site, you know, this was obviously a man-made chimeric virus, probably leaking from a lab. And then you start piecing all the you know, puzzle pieces together. It's been obvious to me since about mid 2020, and here we are 2024, and guys like Paul Offit are still saying there's no evidence of a lab leak.
Well, we're working on a story right now.
Lies can be pushed and can be pushed effectively by people like the COVID cartel.
We're working on a story right now on Eco Alliance and getting a grant here in the United States at a laboratory where there have been 64 mistakes, if that's what you want to call them. But I'll make certain that we get that copy to your office that you'll see, because that grant was given to Eco Alliance here in the United States for a lab since COVID.
So, by the way, a really interesting chart in Bobby Kennedy's book showed that, Fauci gave Eco Alliance, I think, $14 million. Mm-hmm. The Defense Department gave him $42 million. And USAID, who Bobby Kennedy says is CIA cutout, I'm not disputing it, I think $53 million. So,
well, you have to
bioweapons.
You have to understand this. The PREDICT project, which is the coronavirus hunter's game that Dr. Dennis Carroll oversaw when it went from 2009 to, I think it's for 10 years, okay? Joanne Mazet, in fact, she ran the 1,000-plus scientists on the ground. She managed that. So they were all involved with the woman who's the Batcave woman in China. That was actually Peter Daszak, I should say, Dennis Carroll, Joanne Mazet, are all partners today in a public-private partnership. So that which they want to do, and this is where people's eyes should look at in terms of the WHO. If the Biden administration is successful, and this goes along with, you know, the rest of the world, they turn over this health sovereignty to the WHO, and it comes under that one global health model, which is plants, animals, and humans. If that happens, that gain of function model, I guarantee you, will be run by Peter Daszak, Dennis Carroll, and Joanne Mazet under the WHO. That's why it's so important for people to wake up on Capitol Hill and to stop this. And is that possible? Because you introduced a treaty, and I promise you this will be our last question. You introduced a treaty so that if it gets to that point of a treaty or accord, whatever they call it at the WHO, that, you know, it would have to be approved. Because how do we stop this? Even if they get an agreement, even if they get 2/3 of the world members at the WHO saying, yes, we want these amendments, and it works against the common man, common citizen. How do we stop it here in the United States? Other than the fact that if we get Trump in, he's going to cut off the budget. We probably know that. But how can you guys up on Capitol Hill stop it?
Well, the only way to do that is to give it public scrutiny, which is not getting right now. So I did offer an amendment. would have deemed any agreement a treaty, which would have had to come before the Senate for ratification. In other words, debate, discussion. Unfortunately, that was voted down on party line votes. Only one Republican voted for it, and that was the sponsor of the bill, thought as a poison pill. So otherwise, it would have been a complete party line vote, Republicans for deeming a treaty, Democrats against it. So again, that's the partisan nature of these things. Remember, a border fence used to be bipartisan until it became partisan. You would think protecting American sovereignty would be a bipartisan effort too, but now that's partisan because if Joe Biden's for it, all Democrats are for it, regardless how harmful it could be to our society, to your personal health autonomy. So unfortunately, it's a partisan issue. So that bill's not going to pass. And if they actually do pass this in May, we'll be subject to it. And I can't really predict what's going to happen. I'm crossing my fingers that other countries, particularly smaller countries, might be a little suspicious in terms of what this could mean for them. And hopefully they'll rail against it. But I'm not holding my breath.
Well, I hope that they do. And I know that in a lot of the African countries, because I have a lot of friends who are in leadership across Africa, I know that they were going to step back. But my fear is, having seen Kamala Harris, Jill Biden, and also Janet Yellen visit Africa, and I guess it was last year, in the last 18 months, is that, you know, it seems to me that the Biden administration is an ATM machine. Just like they wanted the churches to open to hold COVID events, they were paying those people. They paid the people for, you know, who had the parking lots drive through for COVID. And my fear is that, you know, our government is going to pay off people to get those votes at the WHO. And you know, God help us. That's all I can say. God help us, because there's a lot at stake here.
I hope African nations and their people understand that, you know, the Bill Gates of the world, these non-governmental organizations have used them as their test subjects, unwitting test subjects, in all kinds of different pharmacological instances. So it's sick. It's sick what the West has done to Africa when it comes to their research on pharmaceuticals.
It is. It is. God bless you, Senator. Thank you so much for talking to us today. And I just want to invite you anytime back. At any time you want to come back, please let us know.
I appreciate the opportunity. Stay well.